Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have Mikey and John joining me. And I don't even know where to start with this one, boys. Like, I wish we were living in a simulation because it's a disappointing episode we're about to have, and it was a disappointing game on Saturday.
Yeah, very. You know, I was at a wedding on Saturday, so I was watching, you know, through my phone, trying to stream it, catching bits and pieces, but just tough, you know, back-to-back losses, you know, but in the grand scheme of things, like, look, you know, it's late November, Illinois 7-3. Like, we still have a lot to be happy of and proud of this team. You know, obviously the West hopes making it to Indy are slowly dwindling away, but, you know, nonetheless, you know, still 7-3, you know, two big games left, can still, you know, make somewhat of a splash in the West and, you know, try to hope for the best bowl game that we can get.
It sucks because the stop signs that I thought we were blowing through in our like ascension as a program might be coming back to not necessarily bite us, but just like we might be coming back down to earth and might have to see those stop signs again, because like I was thinking, maybe we're a 10-2 team at the very least, you know, a 9-3 team that makes it to Indy. And to have these past 2 weeks happen where you just needed like one of them to salvage your hope or to, you know, maintain the course. And now it's just kind of like, oh man, in the context of like the tail end of the season, this could maybe not be the best optics, but within the one game sample of just like Purdue, it was just so unfortunate because I feel like there was just, there were moments there where we should have had it and it just never came to fruition, that they never, you know, like the other shoe never fell in terms of the good fortune.
Yeah. It seemed like, I don't even know, like the refs beating ourselves, Purdue making plays, like all three things were kind of stacked against us in that game.
Injuries,
like injuries, penalties, refs calling things that like I've never seen called as poorly, disconcerting signals. What are we doing? Mike, you ever see a disconcerting signal in game?
No, maybe I have. Are you talking about when the Purdue defensive lineman?
Yeah, they're simulating the snap.
Yeah, I feel like I've seen that before. It's a tough call, but that back judge who's standing right behind the linebackers, he has a pretty good feel for what's being said or what's being done down there. So you don't see it called often, but, you know, typically when it is called, it's the correct call. But yeah, just, you know, what a weird game. I feel like you know, I talked about earlier, you know, with the glass half full mindset of a, you know, 7-3 team in late November, but at the same time, it still feels like there's just gray clouds over Champagne. No pun intended, because there probably is gray clouds over Champagne. But it's a weird feeling right now. Like, it's just, you know, the team that we've watched on the field the last 2 weeks in two of the biggest games we've had at home in over a decade, just, you know, lay an egg. And it's team that, you know, we have not seen play all year long. I mean, our defense does not look like the top defense in the country like they were through, you know, the first 8 or 9 weeks of the season. So, you know, whatever it is, you know, we got to get it fixed, you know, going forward, because not only do we have a top three team in Michigan, but then we play our rivals who, you know, Northwestern, you guys know, they can beat anybody. They could beat the Chicago Bears, you know, if it's their day. So, you know, we got to tighten up, or, you know, it could be a rough end of the season here for us.
It sucks that like the feeling we had 2 weeks ago, or, you know, however many weeks ago, was like, well, if things like go the right way, we might have game day in Champaign for Purdue. Mm-hmm. And then now all of a sudden it's like, oh man, I hope that we're not going on like a 4 or 5 like skid in terms of like losing out. And not to say that that's like where my head's necessarily at, but like if you look at it, how the schedule might break, if you somehow do get to Indy, like obviously we'll take that in terms of that, just, you know, supposed loss. Obviously, you got to play the game. It's just like the optics of the season, or even like you look at the nerd stats and like the post game win expectancies, it like I would be able to hang my hat on a little bit more if it was like, you know, we had like a 60 or 70% chance to win this game and, you know, something like the refs, you know, screwed us. It's like, nah, I think we're regressing back a little bit, and that's okay because we've still, Mikey, and like you've said, it's just like we've performed so much more over expectations than what we thought we were going to do this year in terms of like sitting here at 7-3 and kind of complaining about it. Like that in and of itself is amazing. But just from like what then happened in these two games, it just sucks so much because you know like what could have happened, and then like, you know, you can extrapolate it out even further in terms of like the trajectory of the program in totality. And just, I don't know. I think we're kind of talking, or I'm at least talking in circles, but it just sucks. Cause I was just thinking like, you almost had like game day. Like that would have been awesome. And like, Mike, you're talking about like gacking two opportunities at home to really control the West. That's really unfortunate. That sucks. So, and it's not like it's lost on the coaching staff or the players, I'm sure. Cause I know Coach B like knows better than probably anyone. It just slipped right through your fingers. You had it. You had the Big Ten West. It was so gettable this year. And now we need like any number of random scenarios to happen. And a lot of that hinges on like beating Michigan next week. And it just sucks.
It flipped in such a hurry too. Like, I feel like we blinked and all of a sudden we're like, whoa, what just happened? It's one of those feelings where, I don't know, we thought we had it and then we blink and now we're like fighting an uphill battle.
Do you think, like, I'm not saying that the guys read their press clippings like so much, but I think, and I don't mean this in like a derogatory way, because I know that Coach B wants the like players or the program to like forget that like we're Illinois, if that makes sense. Like, obviously we don't want to be what Illinois has been for what the past couple decades in the sense of like a shooting star at random times, but mainly like one of the not so bueno Power Five programs. It's like, I get that he wants them to forget that. But I think maybe they kind of, I'm not saying they were reading their press clippings so much, but just like they also kind of forgot that they can't just roll out the ball and be like, yeah, we're going to win one of these two games and still control our destiny. I don't know if that's exactly what happened, but because like I said, injuries probably, you know, when you're testing depth of a program that doesn't have, you know, all the levels of skill in terms of like building up the recruiting rankings and whatnot. I don't know. I wonder if they maybe thought like, oh, we just need to get like one of these two. Or I mean, they want to get both of them, obviously, but I don't know.
Yeah, it's you know, people will certainly point to that, you know, considering we've not been in this situation before. And the last 2 weeks, as we've said, have been such monumental games for our program. And just the team did not show up in either game. So maybe they were, but. You know, if I was a betting man, if I was in that locker room, I would say that Coach Bielema has them focused on the games. They're not getting into it like we might all think. It makes for a good headline, but I don't think that, you know, knowing what I know about Coach Bielema and some of the guys still on the team, I don't think that's the case. But, you know, I'm not quite sure, you know, honestly, but whatever it is, you know, we cannot have that or it's going to be a long day in Ann Arbor.
Hate seeing that little stupid action figure cannon being just toted around the field by Purdue after the game too. Just rubbing it in.
Yeah, the little cannon that I was underwhelmed by.
We didn't even want it anyway. We don't even like that cannon. So you guys can have it.
we'll take it.
Let me spin zone this, Mikey. Let me spin zone this. We don't want that stupid cannon anyway.
Speaking of cannon, Chase Brown, is there any update on him? You know, 2 yards short of another 100 yards. Tough to see. Hate to see him go down late in the game. I saw that Bielema said he's progressing well. I don't know that he'll actually come out and say he's playing, but, you know, that's a guy you really hope to have back soon.
I mean, you saw it with Josh McCray that – he was talking about Josh McCray for like 3 or 4 weeks before we actually even saw, like, that was a pretty, I don't want to say devastating knee injury, but you knew that was like probably a couple months, if not like a month and a half. And I think within like a couple weeks, he was talking about, you know, Josh is walking on land or he's like getting some running. It's like, I get that the gamesmanship aspect of it, but it also leads me to like, not necessarily, like not believe what Brett Bielema was saying, but I kind of take it with a grain of salt in the sense of like, I don't know if Chase Brown is going to be out there because that looked like a pretty bad. I'm glad it's just an ankle, but it feels like it could have been, you know, like a lot worse. But at the same time, I don't know if that's still like an ankle injury that you can come back next week without, you know, our little boy, Tommy Toradol, maybe, is giving him some of that good, good juice.
Yeah. We'll see. The injuries are certainly piling up, and now, you know, like are we going to burn a red shirt, potential red shirt for Josh McCray if Chase Brown can't go, or are you going to ride with someone like Reggie Love? Like you start going down the depth chart a little bit at some of these positions. Corner, I know, is now thin with Taz being out for the year, and Terrell Jennings got hurt a couple games back and he hasn't been back. So there's been some injuries piling up here, and I'm curious how we're going to navigate it knowing that there's, you know, potential red shirts on the line.
Yeah, especially with, you know, going into a game, you know, against Michigan, who's the heavy favorite at their place. It'll be interesting to see, you know, in the past, I would say that, you know, we were a program that, you know, not that we're not focused on the future. We certainly are, but, you know, we've had some success earlier than, you know, pretty much everybody's thought outside of those in the locker room. So I could see them not, you know, worrying about the red shirt as much as, you know, we might think, because they want to prove that, you know, this is a program that's here and ready to go now. And we have guys coming in and we'll stack recruiting classes, you know, for the future.
Yeah. Plus I think the whole thing Bielema said about McCray is that, like, I think he realizes that he's probably only getting 4 years out of him, whether it's as a redshirt junior or as a true senior. Like, I think, and also that's a good thing. You want that kind of program turnover. And that also means that they're probably recruiting really well and getting guys just in the pipeline that you can keep churning. So I don't know if that's necessarily like my biggest concern. It's just like, I don't know if Josh McCray has really been, I mean, obviously against Wyoming, he was healthy, but like since then, I just don't know if he has like the confidence in his legs again, and that like mental aspect of like an injury and coming back from that. I don't know if he's quite over it yet, but you know, if he's out there, then that means that he's at least told the staff that he's at that point. But yeah, I don't know. It's kind of like a tricky science in terms of like trying to preserve a guy, but you don't necessarily want to play those games if you want to win ball games, you know, on this Saturday. So
I want to get into this because this was a major storyline in the game, and I'm not a big blame the refs guy, but I want you guys to debate this with me. More egregious call this season, was it the Brian Hightower no catch against Indiana, or was it that pass interference on Charlie Jones?
Both major
momentum changing calls.
Considering what happened right after that pass interference call.
Yep.
I mean, you know, if everything's in play, you know, like we're 7-2 against Purdue, we're 1-0 against Indiana. I would say that the Purdue call is a lot more devastating and poorly thrown. But you know, both horrible calls, and the pass interference is one that has been debated for a while on whether or not you should be able to review it, because I do think that would have been overturned, and who knows how the game would have ended up.
I still think I go with the Brian Hightower catch against Indiana, just because like even as like a ref, if you go to like the default, like they should call that a catch, because there was no evidence that he didn't catch that, to the point where like, yeah, he bobbled it at the end, but like the fact that they called it an incompletion, and then even though it very clearly was still a completion, like there was some, I guess, shadow of a doubt when he was on top of the ball. Not that we need to rehash all that, but like that was just egregious in and of itself, because he very clearly caught that and you should have been able to see that. Also the fact, and I don't want it to be like this thing where, you know, like we're getting too into the weeds of like, oh, it's the ref's fault, the rest of this and that and the third, and like it's this huge conspiracy, because I don't really think it is. But at the same time, like, I've watched enough college football, I've watched enough regular football to know that like when you're on the side, like you're throwing to a given sideline, the referee is very clearly influenced by whose team he's on. The fact that that was coming from the Illinois sideline and that that dude didn't realize in the tenth of a second that, yeah, he threw that flag and he could still very easily call OPI because Charlie Jones was draped over a dude. It's like, that's not something that like I understand in the sense of like, usually those guys cave to that pressure. And that's something where it's like just so overwhelmingly bizarre that that happened. And the fact that there were so many penalties called on us, it's just, I don't understand it. Like, did Brett Bielema in a former Big Ten West life at Wisconsin, like, screw these guys over so royally that they just, like, hate him for, like, I'm not going, like, that level. It's just so weird that this is the same crew that did the same thing, not the same thing, but they had the shenanigans at IU with the Brian Hightower catch, like we were just talking about, and then this happens again. It just sucks so badly.
That's perfectly said. I don't have much to add. I was extremely frustrated with the reffing in that game. I mean, I think I saw something, or Bielema said something along the lines of, we had 5 pass interferences in that game and we've had 4 of those called on us all season. And I mean, he's right. Like, if you're going to call that, you can go, you know, pull any other play, look at the other side. I can tell you we're not the only ones shoving guys or, you know, getting physical downfield. But it certainly felt like that based off the penalties and the way those numbers stacked up.
Yeah, you know, I'm like, if they're going to call it, Dan, like you said, call it both ways. If you're not going to call it, don't let them play both ways. It's the only fair thing to do. And, you know, 5 pass interference calls, I did not even know. That's got to be up there for, you know, some sort of, you know, top 10 in our program's history, because that's a lot of yards. I think there was one drive we had 4 15-yard penalties or maybe a 10-yard penalty. So a lot of penalty yards given up. And, you know, it'd be interesting to go check the tape and see, you know, some of those calls to see if, you know, they weren't calling them both ways. But certainly, you know, uncharacteristic of an Illini team, specifically in the secondary.
Yeah. To build on your point about shoving people, Danny, like, and Mike, you just referenced it in terms of like that one drive that Purdue had that was seemingly kept getting extended. This is something where like, I understand like that football is, it's like controlled violence, and it is a very fine line between, you know, being a hothead and being aggressive. I totally get that. I'm not trying to like, I love that the guys usually play with that, but the moronic behavior that you had in that drive where you were like, that was one of the most crucial. You're in the second half, you're trying to mount, not necessarily a comeback, but you're just trying to stem the tides. And you've got a hands to the face that extended drive. You've got roughing the passer that extends a drive when you were going to be in, I think it was either second and long or third and long at that point. You just can't have that. Like when the you need to like it, there needs to be more awareness where it's not frustration that, yes, there could be frustration that the refs are against you, and I get that, but you can't give them further reason then to call stuff like that. You can't have it where, okay, yeah, it's about to, we're about to get the ball back, or we're in a good position to get the ball back on a third and long. You can't then be pushing a quarterback when he's clearly going out of bounds, when he's throwing the ball away. And yes, I understand that when he's getting that close, you don't know if he's maybe throwing to someone, but you just can't touch him when he's getting that close. Like, that's just, those are the kind of things that, yes, it's acceptable in the course of the game when it's, you know, one of maybe 4 or 5 penalties and you're up, but it's not acceptable when you've had like that bad a day in terms of the, like, you just need to have a little bit more awareness to that sense. And that was something that just drove me crazy, because yes, we can talk about the refs and they were terrible, objectively awful, but then we were also beating ourselves too when we can't have that.
Yeah, to me, that's on the coaches for the most part to calm their guys down. We had the little scuffle coming out of halftime. The guys were obviously emotional and were trying to play with that chip on their shoulder and maybe set the tone. And when you have one or two of those, like, okay, maybe that happens, not necessarily acceptable, but at a certain point, the coaching staff needs to be like, look, you guys are beating yourself, like, call timeout, do something. But like, you can't just let the guys be like, all right, I'm going to press harder, I'm going to play even more emotionally, and I'm going to get even more physical, and we'll try to settle it that way. Because as we saw, the refs, when they know a game is chippy like that, they're going to be even more flag happy. So you have to know that, and you have to respond to that, essentially.
Or even like, and not to like, even the not chippiness aspect of it. Like, I get playing with fire, but then, like, you can't have Aiden O'Connell running for, like, 50 yards on a play.
Yeah,
like,
that
you just can't have that. Like,
brutal.
You can't be so out of sorts. You can't be, like, so, like out of your mind that you're playing with. Like, I get it that some guys are in places that they're not used to being because they're not starters. I get all that. But you have to, like, be able to see through all that and, like, focus that. And I get it that it's part of, like, coaching young men. And that's, like, all well and good. But there was just too many mental errors in that sense where you had, like, either bad penalties or just bad pickups and reads and just crucial times where you just, like, were allowed. That's, like, that's the Illinois of old. That's, like, what you can't be having happen. If you're going to change this program around, you cannot have those mistakes keep happening.
Shout out Devin Witherspoon. Got screwed on that call. He made one of the most impressive plays I've seen, that one-on-one tackle against Payne Durham, where he held him from getting the first down. That was awesome.
Yeah, Spoon's a dog.
We knew that, though.
But we did. We've been a big fan of him all year long. But, John, to go back to your, you know, little rant there, you know, discipline is huge, and that's not what you want with our program. That is like the Illinois of old. But those are things you can fix. You know, you can fix those in a week's time and get the guys ready. So moral of the story is, if you're not disciplined, you're not going to win games.
Might I flash back to last year when we went into Penn State and did some things that people just said we couldn't do? Maybe go do that again at Michigan. Maybe correct the mistakes, and maybe everyone will be back on the ship here shortly with a win.
Yeah. Trap game up in Ann Arbor, because we all know who they play next weekend. So who knows? Maybe the guys have come out just like Penn State in that barge formation. You know, everybody down the line of scrimmage, just hand the ball off, chip away at that Michigan defense, and, you know, come out with the win.
All right. We'll leave it at that for now. We will be back in a couple days with a preview against Michigan. And thank you, as always, for listening to this episode of The Field Pass. We appreciate you for following along. You can check us out on social media, at The Field Pass on Twitter. Thank you, and go Illini.